and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Between the Sticks, me, Matt Beadle, here with the Mixed Bag, voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Mixed Bag. Yes, Mixed Bag. I would go with that. Matthew, first and foremost, how are you, importantly?
Better. Thank you. Better. I've been through the mill.
You have, because there's been, I mean, we have been swamped with emails asking us, what is going on? Where is Between the Sticks? I need it. I need my fix. Addicts, you are. Addicts. But yeah, it wasn't that we decided to bin the concept. No, we're still very much running with it. However, you weren't feeling so well.
No, you've been off painting the town red, gallivanting, and I've been stuck indoors, riddled with COVID.
You have. Yeah. COVID had an odd impact on you, didn't it? It turned you into Gollum. I don't really know what happened.
It ripped right through me like a... I don't know. Give me a goalkeeping analogy.
I mean, if you're going to start an analogy like that, you need to have something strong, okay. And I've got nothing for you. I'm sorry. But you did look like Gollum.
It was Dimitar Mitov. There you go. Yes. That's the first name I've got there. Ripped through the hopes and dreams of Newcastle fans.
Absolutely. Didn't he just? He is going to be a major subject
today.
He is. We're going to talk about this eye of yours, this kind of, I don't know, what growth was happening. You look better now, though.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, so I did have COVID. It was pretty horrible. Of course, I'm not the first. I won't be the last. And people have had it far worse than I have. But it did affect me in quite a way. And it did seem to attack my eyes. Mm. And I don't know why. I did a bit of research and there was suggestions that it is a side effect for some people who have COVID. Mm. So yes, if anybody gets that or has an eye that swells up and puffs up and is pretty painful for a period of time, it could be something to do with COVID.
Well, there you go. Great advice to start the show.
Yeah.
Start on a health
back.
Note.
Yes. There we go.
For more information, go to nhs.gov.
So yes, but plenty. It's good to be back, mate.
It is.
It's been a while.
No, it's. I've missed it. It's frustrated me. I know I should feel sorry for you having COVID, but I actually just got annoyed. You know, I was wanting to do the show and you still were using COVID as an excuse, kind of, you know, isolating or doing whatever you were doing. It was, yeah, very frustrating. But oh, no, I'm glad you're better.
Good. Plenty coming up. And we said a mixed bag as well,
yeah,
didn't we?
A mixed bag. There was some compliments for goalkeepers from some of the commentators this week. So we'll touch on that. There were a few. Do we have a commentary corner? We don't this week, do we? I don't think. We were kind of thinking about it.
I didn't want to start with, because commentary corner is something we do more sparingly. Mm. I feel like we made our point with commentary corner, but every so often there is an outrageous comment, so we do slip in a commo corner. But it was noticeable today, or this weekend, sorry, FA Cup third round, of course, Jermaine Genus on Asmir Begovic. It's not just hit him. So he was complimentary there with a great save from Asmir at Hull. Brilliant goalkeeping, didn't go down with his right hand, used his legs, said Dean Ashton on Ian Melier.
Yeah.
What a save, son. We heard that a few times from a certain Ali McCoist.
Right. So do you know what? As much as we've got our list of clueless commentators, I think we can call them when it comes to goalkeeping, we've now got, for me, a clear outright winner for my favourite commentator. Just talks such sense and is so complimentary to goalkeepers.
Yeah,
very above good. And beyond. Mm. Above and beyond. And he actually made some really lovely comments about a few of the guys. I think it's that one. If you know you're playing a game and you find out that Ali McCoist is in the commentary box, you're delighted. You have to be as a goalkeeper now, especially when you've got the choice of some of the others that maybe aren't quite so complimentary, but he is very, very good.
Because there were still some. We said a mixed bag because there were some greats, but there was also still some not quite so great.
Mm, it's true, which I'm sure we will touch on in due course.
We will. On with the show.
Let's do it.
Okay, so FA Cup third round this weekend. What a weekend. Some great football, some great goalkeeping, none more so than at St James's Park. Newcastle 0, Cambridge United 1, and Dimitar Mitov, 9 saves, 23 shots on goal in total from the Magpies. Jacob Murphy 3 times denied, Alan Saint-Maximin and Joel Linton right at the death. What a performance.
Yes, indeed. Hero of the hour, I would say, Matthew. He was phenomenal, inspired. Is the word that I know is used over and over and over again. Do you know what? It's one of them where I could imagine, I'm putting myself in Dimmy's shoes, where you're going up to Newcastle and you just have a feeling, you know, especially where Newcastle are at the moment. And of course, it was always going to need him to have one of those types of days, but he just looked brilliant. Like, I talk a lot about body language and how a player looks, because for me, you can sense so much as to where their levels are psychologically, how confident they are. And you could just see that he had the bit between his teeth. He looked very powerful throughout. The saves that we're going to touch on, obviously great save to his right early on. The save, the fingertip save was brilliant. Not the one necessarily at the end, which was of course fantastic in that moment, but the fingertip save that he tipped over the bar to the right. But the one at the end for me was, yeah, the athleticism he showed, the power to get up top right and manage to get a hand to it. But it was everything. Everything before that, the decision-making to drop to the line when you're in the last minute of a game like that and you have to make everything bang on, that is where I'd use the phrase being in the flow or being in the zone. You know, you could just sense that when you're so connected to the game of football as a goalkeeper and you can just sense everything that's going on, you know where to be, what the optimum position is at the right time, then the speed of reactions to then explode to your right to get fingertips to it. It's almost something that you can't talk about in logical terms, because anyone that's listening will know what I mean, where you're in that space. You are not thinking about anything. There is no conscious thought going on. You are just connected with what's going on and you almost know what's about to happen. And you just felt in that moment, it's easy to say now because he made the save, but you just felt he is not going to get beaten today. He was in one of those frames of mind. And it was that lovely scene when the final whistle and you see him on his knees, so happy. Look, any goalkeeper that has a moment like this, it's so rare for a goalkeeper to have a moment like this, to win 1-0 away at a Premier League club, massive crowd, massive arena, massive stadium, etc. Just the perfect, perfect day for him.
Absolutely brilliant. And what's that, Richard? I hear you ask. What is that?
Oh, was that a text message?
That was a text message.
Who's it from?
It is the return of Text Talk, because we are going to hear from Dimi himself. Here he is talking about two saves. But the first save in particular, that volley from Jacob Murphy. Here's his reaction to that.
Jacob Murphy's save was my favourite save of the game. I think it's such a difficult one because I couldn't see the ball. And to be fair to him, he hits it very well and very hard. And it was just about how quickly can you get your hand towards the ball? How quickly is your reaction time? And luckily, I managed to get... I actually got a really strong hand on it. It's not just a fingertip. I had a good hand on it and I managed to put it into the bar. But my favorite part of it was the Newcastle fan applauded me after making the save, and that's never happened to me before, and it's gonna stay for me with me to the rest of my life.
Very good.
It's excellent.
And you know, I hadn't heard that before we discussed that, because exactly what my thoughts were, and as I just said, that save for me was my favorite, because I thought the speed at which he has reacted to get to his right, to get up and get the fingertips, and he hasn't had to get a big hand to it. It is just a deflection, a diversion, which he did absolutely perfectly. And no, genuinely hadn't heard that. And I believe you have another one, which again, I haven't heard.
No.
So, but I'm excited to hear.
Yes, this is for the save, the Joel Linton header, the save right at the end. Here we go.
What can I say about this save? I think this save could be the biggest save I've ever made in my career. It's just because of the occasion and the timing of the save. It's a 95th minute, it's a cross, and it's just about, because I'm a goalkeeper that likes to come for crosses, and when I realised I couldn't come for the cross, I had to drop as close to the line as I can so I can give myself as much time reaction as possible. So obviously when the header goes in, when Joel Linton heads the ball, it's just about how quickly can you explode. It's about all the gym work you do, you know, for power, all them kind of stuff. And you just put your hand there, manage to put it over the bar. And you can see all the lads jumping around me, celebrating. I was trying to keep cool head because I knew there's another corner coming in. And, you know, special, special moment for me.
Yeah, I love it. Love it. And he's bang on. It's that moment, you know, you can't come for the cross. You drop to the line. But I go back to my point. I don't think at that point it's conscious anymore. I don't think you're thinking, okay, now I need to drop to my line and set. It is just that all those years of training, all those years of gym work, and instantly he makes a decision to go right back on his line, maximize reaction time, ensure that his body weight's forward, then the speed at which you move to your right to then explode into the top corner. It's all those years of work that nobody sees behind the scenes, and it all comes together in that magical moment to help ensure the victory.
I actually, without sounding too much of a wuss, I hope, got a little emotional listening to that. And watching the action from this weekend, seeing those lower league clubs, and say what you like about top flight football, perhaps I have a slightly different relationship with top flight football than I used to have, but I still love the game. It's in me, it's my passion. But watching this weekend and some of the goalkeepers' performances, watching him at the end of the game, like you said, on his knees, like punching the air and making those saves, and seeing the fans and the reaction from the fans as well. Even at Chesterfield, who got spanked 5-1 at Chelsea, which you would expect. But when they scored, the fact that the players were buzzing, the manager was buzzing, the scream, the roar from the fans at 5-1, there's just something so special about FA Cup third round weekend and seeing a giant killing, and especially when the goalkeeper is the hero. Quite emotional.
Yeah, I'll go with that. I've mentioned this once or twice on the podcast, but the game I played against Everton, I suppose that's the closest that I've come to what Dimi would have experienced, where it is that as the game's progressing and you realise you're in with a chance, and at the time we were League One, they were Premier League, and they had a really strong team out. And as the game progresses, you know you're getting closer and closer. That game in particular, our game went to extra time, then it goes to penalties, and it's that weird feeling, even now I get goosebumps just thinking about it, where you kind of think, this could be it. I've had a fantastic game, made lots of saves. Now we've got, now this is the opportunity. And it's then, can you grasp it? Can you pull together whatever mental strength you need to find in order to see it through? You know, it could have been quite easy. The Dimi's made a couple of saves, and then the last minute, that one, it, you know, fingertips and it goes in the corner and he doesn't quite make the save. But again, he's managed to stand up in that moment and do it and see it all the way through. And it is, it's so above the level that you're normally used to. And this is where, again, I can relate in that, you know, the games I was playing for Brentford at the time in League One, don't get me wrong, big games in comparison to, you know, if you're talking lower level. But of course, the moment you then step up to a Premier League team and you're playing at St. James's Park in front of however many thousand, or playing in these big, big arenas, it is a huge increase in terms of experience, in terms of that moment, the emotions that come to you. They're all heightened, of course, because this is, you're stepping out of your comfort zone. And then you're having to then, I suppose, pull on things internally that you wouldn't necessarily have done before, that you don't know if you've got, because you've never been in that situation, or certainly not many times been in a situation like that, which is why I was so pleased for him, just to show that in that moment, he really did stand up and be counted.
I don't want to nitpick, but the winner from Joe Ironside, who incidentally lives with Dimitar Mitov. That's a nice little pairing they've got there. But they had a great night Saturday night. Wow. Yeah. Still having a great week, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
The goal, Martin Dubravka. Now, we saw something similar-ish to this earlier in the season. David De Gea, when Manchester United played Arsenal, Emile Smith-Rowe scored and De Gea was down injured, wasn't he? On this occasion, Dubravka looked like he'd picked up a knock. He half went for the shot, but I just felt that maybe if he'd tried to ignore his injury, he might have done slightly better with it.
Maybe. I think he was unfortunate. I think he's come and it wasn't one he could smother. So he's had to produce a shape to try and make the save, which he did. And then the ball kind of squirms away. Then he couldn't quite get two hands on it. So he tries to get one hand on it. Of course, never really had control of the ball. Ball then breaks free, at which point he's a bit hurt. And then it, of course, breaks and they score the goal. So no, I think this is one that doesn't look brilliant, but I've watched it a few times and I just think it's one of those that he has tried to make the initial save, which he did. He has tried to get on the second ball, which he wasn't quite able to. And it was just a series of unfortunate events in my book.
Okay, we'll move on.
Let's.
Hull 2, Everton 3. Friend of the show, Asmir Begovic. Fourth appearance of the season. Six saves and a winning save. A match-winning save late on. Tom Eves' header. What a save down to his left.
Yeah, brilliant. Really, really good. So much so that I did actually text him that moment. I knew he was playing the game. I knew that he wasn't going to be able to see it.
His boot bag in the goal.
Yeah, it's just his phone would have lit up in that moment. Just what a save. That's all I said. What a save. No, it's a really entertaining game, this one. I really enjoyed it. And I just, in this moment, what I enjoyed about this was his movement was good, his positioning was good. It was just such a strong set position that he took up. And it's when you watch it again, it's the speed of reactions first and foremost, but it's the fact that he's managed to get a full hand, full palm on it. And it's for me, it's strength. I come back to that word, the strength that he's shown for the ball to then come back in the way it did. It's very rare you see something like this. Yeah, it might have been one where he managed to deflect it and get it round the post. But how often do you see it where it's almost like he stopped the ball dead and it's come back out the way from where it come from? It was just strength and speed of reactions, great positioning. Yeah, everything about this, very, very good. And in the end, a match-winning save.
It was, because the winner was scored from Andros Townsend. A word on Nathan Baxter, and again here, the punditry with this one.
Yeah, it's a tricky one because it has moved on him. It's one that you can see his initial movement is to his right, and he then attempts to try and get back to his left and isn't quite able to get a big enough hand in order to get it over the bar. So it's a horrible one. We've all conceded this goal where you initially think it's going somewhere, you soon realise it's going somewhere else and you haven't quite got the ability to get back and get it over the bar. Look, it's one of these, the classic line, oh, well, Feely could do better. Of course, you know, you'll be disappointed that this has gone in because it's one that is a frustrating one. It's a really, really difficult one. This is one of those for me that as much as he'll be frustrated by it, it's certainly not a massive error in my book, because I think the moment you're forced to take the step right, the agility and the power that's required in order to get back to the left, get your hand up, get a firm hand, get it over the bar. If he ends up saving this, it would go down in my book as a world-class save. And unfortunately, that's probably the only bit he'll be a little bit frustrated by, is he did get a hand to it, but just wasn't quite able enough to get a big enough hand to get it over the bar. But no, I thought the commentary was just useless. Again, I thought the detail was terrible. The fact that the co-commentator, or the main commentator, asked Jenas, do you think he could have been a yard further off his line? No, he's already 3 yards, 4 yards. It's a ball that's bouncing. If anything, he could have been a yard deeper. But the fact you're asking Jenas as if he's some expert in this area, and then you can see Jenas fumbling over his words. He's clueless. Has no idea what to say.
It doesn't matter whether he's a yard forward or a yard back.
He could be standing on the halfway line for all I care. No, what are you talking about? You don't know. Why are you asking someone who's as clueless as you in order to give expert opinion? Like, just shush, just leave it. It's gone in. You don't know why it's gone in. You don't know what's happened to Nathan Baxter. Let's move on.
I think it was Jonathan Pearce, who can make terrible. A sweepy when it comes to goalkeeping.
Yeah, goalkeepers, just clueless. But look, it is what it is.
Well, Nathan Baxter didn't make that save, but Rafa Cabral of Reading did make a similar save from a similar shot from Amari Sterling. Brilliant. In Reading's defeat at Agbara against Kidderminster. It was funny this weekend. We saw a lot of similar scenarios of things happening. Sometimes that happens, doesn't it? Where you see the same example. Great for us because we can use the comparison. And here, what a save.
Yeah, no, and actually you're right. Very similar. And that the ball is moving. You can see his movement with his feet. And where, I suppose the slight difference here is he is able to get back, get the top hand and get just enough to get it over the bar. It's a fantastic save. It would have been an absolute, had this gone in, this would have been one that no doubt they'd have been shown over and over. It was a brilliant strike, but what a save. Unfortunately, not so positive later in the game, I think it's fair to say. I felt for him on the winner, ball that's whipped in and then he's bundled over the line and someone sat on top of him while he's in the goal. I don't think that was necessarily fair. And I think had there been VAR, I think there's a good chance that would have been a foul. But no, certainly the goal that beat him down to his right, he just got his hands mixed up. It's always a tough one where it's kind of in between a cup save and then twisting the hands and trying to parry it out to your right, and he kind of gets mixed up and it ends up sort of just squirming through him. So he'd be really disappointed with that one, certainly. But no, the save, take nothing away from the save, it was excellent.
The save, by the way, from Amari Sterling, the winning goal, the guy that was sat on him, I think, Amari Morgan Smith. So an Omari and an Amari. But that's the first time you've had that in the FA Cup third round. What do you reckon?
Quite possibly.
Nothing to do with goalkeeping.
No.
Interesting.
Absolutely. I mean, that is a quiz question for sure.
And talking of similar scenarios, so there was very nearly a playing out the back incident in this one early on from Kidderminster. Luke Simpson, the goalkeeper, managed to get away with that, made a very good save. And we saw similar to this at the weekend, Swindon v Man City, Millwall v Crystal Palace and Yeovil v Bournemouth.
Yeah, and it's tough. I mean, to talk about them individually. In fact, you can group them, because the one that I feel sorry for the most was Lewis Ward, because you can actually see that it's not being driven by him. Now, look, the counter argument is, oh no, he needs to take control. Well, that's easy to say that, but of course, if he's trying to usher everyone up and they're all saying no, pass me the ball, then what do you do? If they're not moving, and the guy wasn't, he was stood on the 6 yard box, desperate to have the ball to show that he could play or whatever it is. So it's tough, because then if you then usher everyone up, you're only going to get shouted at by your manager, and you've got a game plan, you're not sticking to it, you're not a team player, do what we're telling you to do. Lewis Ward didn't actually make any mistakes. He played the ball fine. He played it to his centre back. He played it into his sitting midfielder. They weren't able to deal with it, and they've conceded 2 goals because of it. And yet he's the one that's getting stick, even though he's made a fantastic penalty save. Brilliant save onto the bar, which our friend Ali McCoist so beautifully commented on. So actually, I'm looking at his performance thinking, you had a really good game. Yet he's the one that's getting stick for them playing out, even though that's a managerial decision. And unfortunately, a case of the players in front of him not being quite good enough to find ways out.
Yeah, absolutely. Mark Pugac, by the way, is another one who fuels that fire. The presenter on ITV, it was Enea Luko and Ashley Cole, wasn't it? And he kept trying to get them to criticise Lewis Ward. Ashley Cole, to his credit, was like, this is the way they play. It's the way they play, but perhaps they shouldn't be taking these chances. And they showed, they zoomed in where Lewis Ward was ushering his defenders to move forward.
Do you know the difference? And I suppose this is where So with Nyland and with Butland, the argument can be put forward that it's a back pass. And at that point, you've got a decision to make. Where are you being closed down? Are there any exit routes? If not, then it might be that it is that big first time you go long or take a good touch and then go long. You know, in Butland's case, his first touch wasn't quite so good. And then it's a bit of a panic. And he's trying to thread it through in order to get out. But at that point, it's too late. In Nyland's case, just took a little bit too long. You know, so you could then argue where your decision making wasn't quite right. You should have assessed the situation. And maybe you'd have decided in that moment, because it's a pass back, it's now your decision. Go long. When it's a goal kick, I would argue it's now not your decision. You're following team orders. And Lewis Ward did it perfectly twice. And they conceded two goals. So how's he the one getting stick if he's being ordered to play that way? Yet it's so easy for a commentator, like say, whether it's Pugac, whether it's Roy Keane, whether it's, you know, the people that were giving stick.
He went in, didn't he?
I went in hard. And I think it's obviously that was commenting on Butland. But I think that, certainly for me, as a rule of thumb, if it's from a goal kick, again, that's a managerial decision. It's strategy. It's the way they want to play. It's got very little, unfortunately, to do with Lewis Ward.
We did have a message in from Paul from Utah, a big Swindon fan who's messaged us a few times and did say, you better be speaking about Lewis Ward because he has made some great saves against the Man City team, who they kept saying, I think it was something like 470 international caps combined in that City team. But that's the penalty save, of course, very good. But that save from Rodri.
That's phenomenal. Wow. Do you know what? He's had a few games like that this season from what I've seen. But yeah, that save, again, speed to get to your right. It's arrowing in the top corner. It's one of those as well. It's always nice when you can't see it at first and you've kind of got Ali McCoy. It's like, did he save it? Did he? And then they're having to slow it there. But I love the fact they're looking for it because that is going right in the top corner. And it is fingertips. It's a surefire goal. Brilliant, brilliant save. And I'm sure he must be frustrated. And I've been there myself where no doubt he'd have seen some of the commentary, seen, you know, a few people no doubt would have contacted him on social media and what have you. And when you feel that there's not much more you could have done and you've actually had a very good game, I can imagine that must have been a really frustrating evening coming off, feeling like you've made a couple of brilliant saves. You saved a Jesus penalty. You know, how many people can say they've done that? Great save in the top right-hand corner. Follow team instruction, and yet you're still getting a bit of stick.
Well, speaking of fingertips onto the bar, we'll do a quick rundown, shall we, of the rest of the games. Just Tim Krul right at the death as Norwich won at Charlton, that Ben Purrington header. I think he got a touch to that. Stephen Henderson as well, the Charlton goalkeeper we saw up for delivering that free kick, which was good to see. David Button up against his old club, three very good saves. He was brilliant on the day, but sadly, they lost out West Brom. Michael Cooper, a touch wide from Chucks Anike. Plymouth beating Birmingham. Tyshby Hammond keeping it clean for Boreham Wood against AFC Wimbledon. Also clean sheets for John Ruddy. Wolves beating Sheffield United. Jack Bonham, Stoke beating Leighton Orient. A good tip over from him, from Harry Smith. Header, a word on Paul Farman. Barrow lost 5-4 at Barnsley. But what a game this was. Four goals in the final 10 minutes. And the reason I want to mention him is because he absolutely launched one for Josh Kay right at the death to equalise, to take it into extra time. Cannot understate what a pass that ultimately was. Absolutely launched it under pressure from the attacker as well. And Nicholas Bilokapic for Huddersfield. I don't know whether that's how you pronounce it or not. We'll have to ask Paul Clements if he's listening. Please do let us know. In for Huddersfield, a debut as early as 40 minutes, replacing Ryan Schofield. Huddersfield winning at Burnley, him keeping a clean sheet in the time that he was on the pitch.
Yeah, indeed. Well, plenty to touch on there. And a couple in particular I will mention, because lads I work very closely with and lads I was really happy for, it has to be said. So David Button, who a lot will know his story, but he's for the last 4 years always been back up. Obviously, Sam Johnson, who's been excellent, you know, for West Brom, certainly in the last 18 months or so, and very difficult to get ahead of him. Of course, Matt Ryan before that at Brighton has had to wait. And then before that was an ever-present at Fulham, at Brentford, etc., etc. So to get his opportunity and to take it in the way that he did, I mean, Brighton should have been out of sight in this one. So to take it to extra time and the save he made in particular down to his left-hand side was phenomenal. And that's one where, like, we talk about height from time to time and how it doesn't make all that much difference. And I truly believe that. This is probably one of those situations where I think having the flexibility and the speed that David Button has, and being 6'5", you know, to get down long limbs and to get the fingertips to this. This is the kind of one that I know, certainly from a, I'm speaking from a personal perspective, you know, at 6 foot, I'd have found this very tough to get down to that save. I thought that was a brilliant, brilliant save. And Jack Bonham made his debut for Stoke, which delighted for him. Had to wait a little while for it. Has gone in there in order to challenge with, of course, Joe Bursic, Adam Davis, and really solid performance. Great save in the top corner, which at the time would have made it a very different game. And in the end, they ran out, I say, comfortable winners. Certainly statistically, I think Leyton Orient, and in terms of the flow of the game, I think they'll have felt a bit hard done by not to get something, but really pleased for him. I wanted to touch on the Michael Cooper save as well. Again, another brilliant save. One for me that we talk a lot about positional sense, but it's that positional sense, get your set position, and it's the full stretch down to his left-hand side, and probably similar to the David Button one in a way where it's those long limbs and he's able to get fingertips. It's just lovely as it brushes off the fingertips and just goes the other side of the post, knowing that it would have gone right in that bottom corner. But yeah, just a brilliant, brilliant save.
That's the type of save that goes missing, doesn't it, in amongst everything else. Doesn't often get flagged, but that's why we're here.
That is exactly why we're here, Mr. Beadle.
A couple more I thought I would flag. The first one, Ian Melier. Good performance for Leeds, unlucky to be on the losing side at the London Stadium. They lost to West Ham 2-0. The VAR decision for the opener from Manuel Lanzini. What was going on here?
It has to be offside.
It does, right?
Yeah, it's just, it's unbelievable.
To like, say that he's not interfering with play
is a joke.
At the moment, they froze the frame where he's clearly interfering with play.
Oh, it's unbelievable. And the fact you're watching it and they're deliberating for as long as they are, and you're like, you're going to give offside, just do it. Just do it. Hurry up and do it. And then, yeah, unbelievable. But again, I know you're a big fan of VAR, but I do have my question marks.
That is where you want the co-commentator, and it was Dean Ashton, to say, and he was saying, I think they're trying to determine whether Jared Bowen has touched the ball. That's exactly what they're trying to determine, what he's done. Just scream, what is going on here? This is a shambles, absolute shambles. But hey, they gave it just like they gave, or they didn't give, sorry, the equaliser for Aston Villa against Manchester United. Also a very strange process that they went to on that occasion. However, QPR Rotherham as well, another game that went, well, a game that went to penalties. Jordan Archer, what a mad situation this was. A penalty save and an injury, which hasn't been reported yet, the full extent of that.
No, I don't think, from what I've led to believe, I don't think it's good news. And yeah, it's a horrible one for him, and it's a brilliant save, first and foremost. You see as he saves it, and I've done this myself, where you are full stretch, and because of that, you can't control your landing. And I think this often happens on penalties. In fact, happened to me the very same thing, very similar thing when I was, must have been 21, 22. And when you are absolutely at full stretch in order to get fingertips, get it around the post, which he did, obviously when you land, you consider your body landing in that position. So much force goes through the shoulder. It's very easy to dislocate a shoulder or to do something in there. And shoulder joints for keepers, you know, can be an absolute nightmare, which I know personally. And it's that horrible moment when you're down and he's obviously trying to say to the team, don't, like, I'm struggling, but they can't see that. And he's probably not able in that moment. He's not, you know, he's in a lot of pain. So he's not able to communicate, to say, leave me alone, leave me alone. And they come and jump on him. I mean, horrible. I know when I dislocated my shoulder, the idea of someone actually coming and jumping on me would have just been an absolute nightmare. So no, I felt sorry for him. Of course, they've now brought in David Marshall for their next game. So obviously, it'd be interesting to see how he performs. Been out of the spotlight for a while now at Derby. But no, we wish Jordan Archer well. It's such a shame for him, given that, of course, Senny Dieng being at the African Cup of Nations, this was going to be his opportunity to get a few games. And sod's law, first game, he does an injury like that.
It looks so innocuous as well, didn't it?
Yeah.
Every time I watch it, I'm like, where is it? Where's he?
It's just that, like I said, I think for a goalkeepers that have done it, yeah, it's that one. It is just that. If you're landing and you haven't got control, because actually you consider a lot of the time when a goalkeeper makes a full stretch save, they're able to retract by the time they land, or they're able to, certainly if it's a parry, they're able to just bring their arms in a bit so the shoulder's not quite as exposed. You're able to just bring it in slightly and cushion the landing. This was a situation where he just couldn't do that. He was so intent on making the save. This is the irony. Had he have actually let the ball in, he wouldn't have got injured. If he had just pulled his arm away and landed safely, he doesn't get injured. But of course, being a goalkeeper like the majority of us are, and he certainly is, he was so determined to make the save that he's put his own health at risk.
The the price you pay.
That is the price you pay for being a top goalkeeper.
We should just mention Josh Vickers as well. Good performance for Rotherham.
Very good. Two very similar saves. Really good reaction saves. Ball whipped across, smashed in, and very, very good on both occasions.
And he was one because of the thrill of the minute lifestyle that I live here, Richard, of course. 32 ties this weekend in the FA Cup third round, which means 64 goalkeepers.
Yep.
Good maths.
65, you include Huddersfield, that played two.
Well, okay, very good.
Thank you.
I was going to get onto that, but I've got that there before me.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Very good. So, of those 64 goalkeepers, how many were number twos and number threes?
Oof. This, you've done your research. Okay, I am going to go with a heavy number. How heavy do I go? I'm going to go 25.
Ooh, close.
Go on.
It's actually more.
Go on.
29, or if you factor in Huddersfield, Nick, you're going to call him, 30.
30 out of 64.
30 out of 64. I mean, technically some goalkeepers have played the last couple of games, but I'm going on the general number two, number three vibe this season. And Trevor Carson as well, I've lumped in there too. He, of course, has come in on loan at
Morecambe.
At Morecambe, but went straight into the side. But I'm saying he's a number two, number three.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go. Lovely, lovely little bit of research you've done there.
There you go.
I mean, as a percentage, what are we talking, 45%?
I don't know. That's all on you.
Okay, fine. Yeah, but no, it's impressive. But that's it, right? This is, and it'll be now interesting how many then keep their place moving forward. Now, it'll be a very low number, but there will be someone that has been given their opportunity, that's taken their opportunity. Maybe the first choice has had a rough game or two, and suddenly they're given that extended run. We see it so often.
GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way. GK's on the way. I say GK's on the way.
There we go. It's back.
It is. It's this time of the year.
It is very exciting. This used to be one of my favourite parts of the show, and we have to wait 4 months for it to come back. But it's back a bit late into January. We're only going to get a couple of these because of the break that we've had. By the way, before we move on, we've established in a very mini break that it's actually 31 number two, number threes. I didn't include Ainsley Pears for some reason. I've just looked at my list, and he's not in there. So, 31, even more.
One goalkeeper off half, or 50%.
Wow.
Such a shame.
Anyway, there has been plenty of movement, some in December as well, that we didn't touch on at the time. So we're going to quickly mention those too. But some transfers that have occurred in January are so David Marshall, Derby to QPR. I'm going to do these and then you're going to comment on them afterwards. David Marshall on loan until the end of the season, Derby to QPR. Jonas Lersel in at Brentford from Midtjylland. That is a loan deal. Dejan Stojanovic has gone to FC Ingolstadt. That's on loan from Middlesbrough. Emmanuel Idem is unattached. He's gone into Swindon. Trevor Carson, who we mentioned, Dundee United to Morecambe. That is a loan deal. Laurie Walker permanently has moved from MK Dons to Stevenage. Not permanently Stevenage, but on loan is Christy Pym. That's three goalkeepers that Stevenage have used so far this season. But Joseph Anang, the West Ham loanee, has gone back to the Hammers. Karl-Johan Eriksson from Mjällby to Dundee United. Taylor Seymour from Burgess Hill to Crawley. That's a deal until the end of the season. Andrew Fisher, MK Dons to Swansea, £400,000 reported to be. Stephen Bender on loan. He's gone out of Swansea to Peterborough. Daniel Giolai has gone from Peterborough to Maidenhead. Michael Verrips from Sheffield United to Fortuna Sittard. That's a loan with an option to buy. And Willy Caballero has extended his deal at Southampton until the end of the season.
There you go. Quite the list. Interestingly, not many, other than Andy Fisher, of course, to Swansea, but not many for money. So many that you'll see, and I think that's going to be the pattern of this window, is going to be loans and frees. And certainly, interestingly, with Brentford and Southampton, I think we touched that on a previous pod, the fact that they weren't covered for that number three spot, but they are now, obviously with Jonas Lersel and Willy Caballero, respectively. Two names that, more than fill that. Of course, Jonas Lersel coming in as a two initially, but it'll be interesting to see what happens when David Reyes fit, whether Fernandez keeps his place as a two and Lersel moves in as that number three. David Marshall to QPR is another interesting one. Obviously, hasn't featured at all for Derby this season, surprisingly to an extent, because of course he was a big part of what they did last season. But it's very, very clear that it's Keller Roos and Ryan Alsop at Derby are the chosen two there. So big couple of weeks ahead for him at QPR. But then going back to the original one that I touched on, Andy Fisher, which is the big one so far, I think it's fair to say. Of course, done a great job at MK for Russell Martin initially. Russell Martin now making the point of wanting to bring him in, given that he's got a very specific style of play. And this, again, we spoke about this before, but you see goalkeepers joining certain clubs. But now, more than ever, there are certain types of goalkeepers that fit certain types of team. I don't think it's just a case like we might have seen previously where a club just wants to bring in a good goalkeeper. They are very much bringing goalkeepers to fit their style of play. And certainly Andy Fisher, he is, when it comes to distribution, when it comes to the Russ Martin style of football, he very much fits it.
Feels like a massive move that, and a move that we don't see so often these days. You say he's the only move that's gone for money. We've spoken many times on the podcast that those deals that happened two or three seasons ago, Bentley going into Bristol City, David Rea going into Brentford for a lot of money at the time. You don't really see that, especially in League One and League Two. So for this deal to happen, a League One goalkeeper in January going to a Championship club is very rare.
It's really unusual. And that was it. Like you said, the bigger examples, of course, being Alisson and Kepa. You know, when they both happened and you're like, wow, okay, there's a real realization that you need a top quality goalkeeper and you're happy to pay for it. And then for one reason or another, COVID playing a big part in fairness, that's the money isn't necessarily there that was there. And naturally, certain positions then become seen to be less important. Unfortunately, goalkeeping, that's where it is. It will always be strikers and wingers and what have you where the money's spent, and less money is being spent on goalkeepers. So you're right, it is a big statement and a big decision to spend money in January like this. But again, I think this goes back to teams having such defined identities and styles of play, and certain goalkeepers do fit certain teams. And certainly Russ Martin's probably a bit of an extreme on this, in that we spoke a lot last season of Andy Fisher playing for MK and some of the moments where he's threading it through two strikers and he's dribbling into central midfield almost. There is a lot that he asks of his goalkeeper, and truth be told, there's just not many in the country that can play the way he wants to play.
And we're just starting to see the merry-go-round, aren't we? Goalkeepers going into a club, goalkeepers then going out of a club to another club who have just got rid of a goalkeeper and need someone to replace that goalkeeper. So we're just starting to see the merry-go-round. And it was evident at Peterborough and Stevenage. So Stephen Bender has gone in to Peterborough because Christy Pym has gone out of Peterborough to Stevenage. Now, I mentioned they've used a lot of goalkeepers this season. So they've brought two in, Laurie Walker on a permanent deal and Christy Pym from Championship Peterborough to League Two Stevenage. Interesting move, this.
Yeah, interesting. I think that, and I guess you can look at it in different ways, in that Christy Pym gets promotion last season from League One to the Championship. Of course, you know, I think it's well publicised that things didn't work out this season with him and the manager, and nothing to do with performance necessarily. And then I guess you've got a decision. Do you then hang around at a club knowing that you're not going to be part of it, or do you want to get yourself out? Then, of course, if you're going to get yourself out, it's dependent on what slots there are. And the truth is, there's not that many slots in January. There just never is. However, he has got a previous relationship with the Stevenage manager. So from his point of view, he's probably looking at it thinking, yeah, I quite fancy some football for a manager that I know well and knows me well, and somewhere I feel I can add real value. And actually, I just love playing football. Now, it's quite nice when you're in a position that, again, I don't know his financial position, but of course, if you are at Peterborough, he's not going to have to take a pay cut or anything. So he's probably just looking at it from the point of, do I stay here where I'm not particularly happy and maybe not particularly valued in the way that I want to be? Or do I just go somewhere for 6 months, really enjoy my football, rack up another 25 games and just enjoy playing again?
Okay, sold.
There you go. Easy.
You've charmed me. Right, we are just less than halfway through the transfer window. As a well-connected man in goalkeeping, if you look into that crystal ball of yours, what can we expect?
Oh, what a question. Truth be told, at the moment, there's nothing imminent that you would look at, certainly in the Premier League, and think, oh, they must do something this window. There's one or two possibilities that I've heard of. I won't spread the rumours further, but there's one or two I've heard of, potential number twos going in into the Premier League, which if that does happen, goes back to what you said before about the domino effect, because they will probably be either other goalkeepers from the Premier League or potentially from the Championship, which will then spark that chain reaction. I think there's still a few loans to happen in League One and League Two. And you've got a few examples, i.e. Salford, Zach Sheacock returning to Birmingham, so you do wonder whether they'll do something. Bilson, who was at Scunthorpe from Coventry, has returned, so you wonder whether they might do something. And there's a few other examples like that. So I think we'll see four or five more loans of note. MK Dons, obviously, with Andy Fisher moving on, there'll be somebody you would think would come and replace him. So I think this next week we'll see a bit, and then I think we'll see a late flurry, but it just depends. It could be that we see nothing after the next week, that everything gets done and then it just goes completely quiet. But you always get an injury, sending off, COVID, something that happens, and it only needs one to move, which could then lead to six or seven moving.
Okay, Richard, it has been nothing but a pleasure being back.
Absolutely. Always enjoyable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keep us away.